Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottling, filling in for Colin Cowherd. John Middlecoff's going to join us half past the hour, 3 and Out podcast. We'll get his sense of some of these opt-outs, what it means for the defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. We might talk a little golf as well. Middlecoff loves to talk golf. In 1 hour, 1 hour from right now, what I believe everyone is missing about opting out in college sports. Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is the Herd. So the Lakers lost again last night. Again. The Lakers lost again last night. And what's interesting to me, and here's the Lakers who were 2 of 19 from 3. Granted, LeBron James didn't play. Right? We understand that. LeBron James didn't play. They've already clinched the one seed. They are, in fact, playing for nothing. Nothing. But you combined that they were, 5 of 37 the night before and then 2 of 19 last night. They are on the worst five-game shooting stretch of any team in the NBA this season. And it's not really close. But here's what's maybe interesting about it. What's going to happen if the Lakers lose in the playoffs is what you've heard from Colin Cowherd. The team's just not that good. And that would be fair. In far as shooting the basketball. And remember, this was not their plan A or even their plan B or probably their plan C. That's not it. Because their plan A was to have Darren Collison as their point guard. He chose to be and stay retired. Their plan B was to have Avery Bradley, and he's chosen to opt out of a chance of playing for a championship with LeBron James. Their plan C, I guess, was Rondo, who right now is recovering before he can try and be playoff Rondo 10 years after he was actually playoff Rondo. So we can blame the point guard position or the paucity of shooting on Rob Pelinka not putting enough shooters around him. On the other hand, the level of and quality of defense that they have is good enough, great enough, that they have the best record in the Western Conference in the NBA for the regular season. So what is it? Are the Lakers not any good and they can't shoot? Or are the Lakers really, really good and they can't shoot? And I would say it's probably more of the latter than the former. This was Frank Vogel, head coach of the Lakers, and the struggles with their shooting.
We just haven't had practice time. So, we got to continue to work through it. And again, we got a lot of guys going in and out. We're watching tape on it each day, trying to learn from the types of shots we're trying to create. I thought we took less bad shots from the perimeter tonight, and that usually helps your percentages. It didn't tonight, but it did create more attacks to the basket, more free throw attempts, more points in the paint. So there's some positives there.
Yeah, we had more points in the paint. Okay. 2 of 19 from 3, 5 of 37 before, and just the basic math to it when you're going to play a team, like the Portland Trailblazers potentially in the first round of the NBA playoffs. And the Portland Trailblazers are a team where Damian Lillard hit 10 threes on his own last night. Now, yeah, you can live by it and die by it. You can become 2-3 point heavy, which is what's happened to the Houston Rockets over time, or you go back to the Dallas Maverick for previous years. And there is a certain grittiness to the ability to defend. The Lakers have been one of the elite defensive teams in the NBA throughout the season, and that's what allowed them to be successful. And generally, that is what determines whether or not you'll win a championship, right? Like, people do miss that, yes, the Golden State Warriors would hit you for three after three after three after three, but when they were truly a dominant team, they were a great, analytically speaking, a great defensive team, which this team can still be very good. But as much as we want to make it about the three-point shooting, can we make it about LeBron James? I like what's called, what I call, congruent argument. Right, which means if the argument is good for one thing, why isn't the argument good for something else? It's the if it's in fact the same argument. If you, like me, think LeBron James should be the league's MVP, not simply based upon his play, but his leadership and his ability to get other guys to play above their normal level, right? That is what true greatness does. Because if we look at it, and, you know, Colin's done it, you break down this roster, you're like, Danny Green's like a year or two over the hill. Kyle Kuzma's been lost this year. Lost. He's trying to make Anthony Davis into an alpha. That's really hard to do. We mentioned the turnstile that is the starting point guard spot. You have all these, like, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a guy that's always been a good player on a bad team and a bad player on a good team. That's really, if you look at his stats, anytime he put up numbers, his team was garbage. And so to get that team to be the one seed in the West, to play for a coach who he had no relationship with previously, then you have an assistant coach in Jason Kidd where people thought he would be out headhunting for the head coaching job. Like, you're in the West. The West isn't as tough as it's been because the Spurs aren't what they've been. There are no Golden State Warriors this year. Like, I think if we're honest, we would say the West is far more conquerable than it has been because, well, there aren't the Warriors. And there aren't the Spurs, really. So those are two of the dominant franchises over the last decade. And neither are truly competitive at the top of the West. It's a very different conference. But if you want to get down to it, I would say that because of last year at this time, Magic had announced his resignation. They searched for and got a head coach. So people were like, "Whoa, I don't know about that one," right? They had to trade everything in the kitchen sink to get Anthony Davis. Could you find? And they end up getting the one seed. So I think that LeBron, who's not as athletically talented as he used to be at either end of the floor, but his leadership, getting others to rise their level, his ability to build up Anthony Davis's confidence, all of those things. Lead me to say that I think LeBron James is the MVP of the league. On the other hand, if he's responsible for when they play well, why is he not responsible for when they don't play well? Right? Whether it goes back to last year, because everybody said, well, last year when he was hurt, they fell apart. Yeah, well, they fell apart because he was disconnected from the team. He came in with a goblet of wine and buzzing around the team, which is a terrible look. And then when he came back with LeBron James in the lineup, they lost to the Memphises, the Phoenixes of the world, the teams that were trying to be bad, the Dallas Mavericks, and they still couldn't win those games when they mattered. If he's responsible for the winning, he has the same or similar level of responsibility for the losing. It doesn't work where, well, they only win because LeBron played well. When they play poorly, it has nothing to do with LeBron. In fact, statistically, this year, there is no greater correlation between winning and losing than how LeBron James plays. Look at his stats. It's like 27 a game and shooting, you know, 50 from two and 40 from three and in the 70s from the free throw line. Look at that. When they win, 7 points a game more. Like more than 10 percentage points better shooting three-point shots, more than 5 percentage points shooting better two-point field goal shots, and shooting far better from the free throw line as well. Here's Rick Bucher.
Anthony Davis, in L.A., his numbers are pretty indistinguishable between wins and losses. If you look at LeBron James, his numbers are starkly different between wins and losses, and not in terms of rebounds and assists and being a distributor. It's being a scorer. I think that the win over the Clippers was an aberration. LeBron James at 35 is going to have to be their closer, is going to have to be a scorer, and he's going to have to be one of their two best defenders.
Yes. I don't know if he'll have to be one of their two best defenders, but I do think that he's going to have to find a way to carry a team. To carry a team. Now, is it a perfect team? No. But I could make the same point about any of these teams in the West. Like, we make it out like LeBron James is going up against, is going against these perfect opponents. Right? Like, let's go through the other teams in the West. The LA Clippers, they got a great depth of talent. Hey, but Patrick Beverley, it might be their heart and soul, but truth is, he should be coming off the bench. Lou Williams does come off the bench. He only goes left. He's a scoring machine, but there are times in which he's ice cold. You know, he can be a little bit flaky as well. There's a reason he's always come off the bench on the good teams he's played with in the NBA. Kawhi's spectacular, but he's always banged up. Paul George has been up and down in the playoffs. They don't really have a starting, you know, center or power forward or anybody that Montrezl Harrell doesn't scare you. They're not a great rebounding team. Like, and the Clippers, by the way, have never been beyond the second round of the playoffs. Kawhi has, but no one else has. You know, I mean, Paul George a little bit when he was in Indy, but never had real postseason success. So we're comparing LeBron and the imaginary team he's supposed to be playing with as if he's playing against these all-time great teams when even the most talented competitor has a ton of flaws. And who else is there? Oklahoma City, who's a surprise. Dallas that plays no defense and isn't there yet. The Houston Rockets that can only play small ball. Russell Wilson, you know, can't shoot. They're playing like a small ball center or power forward. You know, they have one trick. They're one trick pony. Let's play small. Give it to James Harden and see what he can do. So I understand that you have the desire to freak out and blame the shooting. And on some level, that's a reasonable thing to blame it on. When you shoot so poorly that you have the worst 5-game stretch of any team in the NBA, it's a notable flaw. But in spite of the paucity of quality shooters on that team, they still have the best record in the West. And they got there with defense, with leadership, with LeBron James, with Anthony Davis. And when they're good, it's when LeBron's good. And when they're bad, it's when LeBron's bad. And if you want the glory and the respect of LeBron carried them, then he's going to have to carry them.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. So Tom Brady told Jenna Lane, who's a Buccaneers insider, quote, it's been different having the opportunity over this time to move and to, for example, study my playbook. I mean, I haven't really had to do that in 19 years, so you forget, man, that's really tough. Like, all the different terminologies, you're going back a very long time in my career. You don't have to put the mental energy in like I did. I have to work at it pretty hard physically still. I put in a lot of time and energy into making sure I'm feeling good in order to perform at my best, but mentally, I think there's been that's been the thing that's obviously had its challenges. Well, look, I don't hate to say I told you so. I actually love saying I told you so. I just do. I love saying I told you so. And I think Tom Brady, being completely honest here, is telling you just how hard it is to learn a different football terminology at this age. You know, inside your brain, there's this like space in your brain for language. And supposedly, if you can fill it up with different languages by the time you're like 5 or 6, it's much easier throughout your life to speak multiple languages. And I know many like nanny nations like, well, we had a Russian nanny, but my kid doesn't speak Russian because it's the development of a certain part of your brain. And sports is much the same way. It's much the same way. Like, you know, Alex Smith had, I think, 7 offensive coordinators in his first 7 years in the National Football League when he was up and down and all over the map when he was in San Francisco. But it gave him a chance to learn a ton of terminology. Maybe prepared him for the move to Kansas City and then the move ultimately to the Redskins. And now if he can make this incredible comeback with a completely new regime with the Redskins. Tom Brady, it's been the same thing. What does that mean? Like if you're a civilian at home, I'll give you a little sense. Okay. In basketball, the same thing exists, especially in college basketball, where certain types of screens, like there's a UCLA screen. Everybody calls it a UCLA screen. That's when you pass to the wing. There's a big guy at the elbow, and the guard cuts off of the big guy at the elbow to the strong side block. That's called a UCLA cut. Where does it come from? Well, UCLA's famous high post offense that John Wooden ran, that's how you started the offense, UCLA cut. If you start at one, if a score starts in one corner and you have two big guys up high and that score comes and while the point guard's dribbling, he comes between the point guard and the big guys and goes to the opposite side of the floor to catch it at the wing. That's called an Iverson cut. That's because that's how they'd run ISOs for Allen Iverson in Philadelphia. An Iverson cut. There are some things that are universal. Cover 2, the cover 3, cover 4. There are different sorts of ways in which you slide covered for your blocking schemes. And so there are things that are universal, but there are unique things where when I played in college, if a team was in a box set and somebody set a diagonal screen, we called that a Bama. Why? Because somewhere along the lines, they must have played Alabama and that's what they ran. And so it became known as Alabama. And when you have to relearn these things, we call that Chicago. Why? We played Chicago once. It's confusing. I'll remember when I was when I played professional basketball my first year, I played in Russia, Perm, Russia, Batum, Russia. And I actually had a Russian tutor, so I can speak. Я говорю немного по-русски. I speak a little Russian. I understand a lot, but I speak a little bit, and it's still kind of, you know, it's probably uncomfortable if you're Russian to listen to me speak Russian. But I took a Russian tutor, and every Sunday I would go over to the tutor's house, and for the first hour, we would speak only Russian, and the second hour, we would speak only English because her and her family, had never been to America. They'd only learned English through like the King's English, like learning through the book. So they didn't understand the nuances, especially of American English. But oftentimes when I'd be speaking Russian or trying to find a word, sometimes it would come out in Spanish. Wait, did I just speak Spanish when I'm trying to speak Russian? And why is that? I grew up in Southern California and the first foreign language I learned was Spanish. And it was, you're thinking in English, translating to Russian, sometimes it comes out as Spanish. What does this matter with Tom Brady? Look, Tom Brady has learned one language, one football language his entire career. And so you can study up as much as you want and they're going to have no preseason games. No preseason games. And so when you get to the line of scrimmage and you're yelling alert, 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 all of a sudden, instead of reverting back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers terminology, there's a very strong likelihood he reverts back to the Patriots terminology because that's what you've always done. So I think can it work? Yeah, it could work. They got a ton of talent around him. And, I mean, look, can he figure it out? He's Tom Stinkin' Brady. Of course he can figure it out. But Tom Brady, the strength of Tom Brady at 43 years old is from the neck up. is that he's seen everything, can read everything, can pick you apart based upon your coverage, knows what you're doing, and knows where he should get with the football. But all of a sudden, that becomes marginalized on some level because he has to think, wait, what do we call this? And there's no way to replicate that other than game reps. And when you start the season in New Orleans, and then you go to Denver, and then you go to Chicago, regardless of whether or not you're going to have a crowd or not have a crowd, all three of those teams are going to get after you and going to give you different looks. And what language rolls around in your head?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I saw this from Packers insider Rob Domofsky. This is from a longtime scout for an NFC team. They're back to square one. Same guys as last season. If I was them, I'd sign Antonio Brown. You just use him for 1 year. Let's say Aaron has two great years left. I've got to go for it. I kind of agree. I mean, that's honestly Seattle's thinking, not just with Jamal Adams, but probably with also going after Antonio Brown. Yeah. I mean, look, the simple answer is, yeah, go for it. The difficult part to it is the culture of what you've done and how you've always done it. The pending civil stuff, which is out there, which could cause him to be suspended even more. The upsetting of the apple cart with Antonio Brown waiting in the wings to start playing week 9. Like, financially, it totally makes sense. Skill set wise, it totally makes sense. But it's all of the other stuff which leads you to pause and just go, I don't know. I'm going to take a breath here. But when you don't draft a wide receiver and people expected you to, when your one free agent signing of a starting wide receiver, a guy who caught 60 balls in a season in the NFL, decides to opt out, when you're not in love with all of your wide receiving room outside of one clear star, the answer appears to be yes. If it is a no to the Green Bay Packers, it's not a no to Aaron Rodgers and finding him weapons. It's a no to Antonio Brown and all of the nonsense that comes with him. And can we stop with the Jordan Love stuff? I have friends who have radio shows on this network who are like, dude, they clearly don't want Aaron Rodgers. They want Jordan. Nobody thinks Jordan Love is a year away from being a year away. He is a futures play. He is not a there. This is NBC buying the rights to Drew Brees in the future. And even when Drew Brees works for NBC, whether it's next year or the following year or whatever, it's not like he's doing Sunday Night Football. They already have Chris Collinsworth. You wait, you allow him to groom him, mature, call Notre Dame games, and eventually he's the heir apparent. That's what you're going to do. But you don't even have preseason games. No preseason games where he would have taken some snaps, none of these scrimmages, but no live football. If you're not going to see Jordan Love unless Aaron Rodgers gets hurt, God forbid, or they have a great season, he plays week 17. Otherwise, you'll only see him on the sidelines. So, yeah, I agree with the idea of Aaron Rodgers has at least two great years left, maybe a third. During that time, you're going to have to find a way to get him a running game, right? Like, they're a power running team. Look, the Patriots did that as well. Patriots knew they had to run the football more with an older quarterback. Same thing happened with the Saints. Got to run the football. So that's what they're doing. On paper, you sign Antonio Brown. The problem is you don't know if he can get along with anybody.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
We all say, like, well, look at that cutter. Look at that cutter. But how does it actually work? You know what? Let's ask a guy who might have the nastiest cutter in baseball right now, Dustin May from the LA Dodgers. He might have the best cutter. He definitely has the best hair. He joins us in the Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Okay, so grab a baseball and explain to me it's two seam cutter. That means so your fingers are on the seams, right? You're not going cross seams. That's a four seamer. How does a cutter work?
I mean, for me, I kind of grip it like a four seam, and I just kind of cock it kind of up a little bit, and then I just try to pull across and just kind of let the grip work. I don't really try to manipulate it too much because I don't want it to be too big. I just kind of try to throw it as hard as I can and just kind of let the grip work so it's small and tight.
Okay. I mean, you make it sound so easy. The estimated amount of horizontal movement on your cutter, 17 inches. Manny Machado looked like a child when you struck him out the other night down at Petco. Why does yours move so much more than some others move?
Are you talking about my two-seam or my cutter?
Well, okay, so there's a difference?
Yeah.
Okay. So the two-seamer is just a fastball, and your fastball has cutter-type movement? Is that fair?
No. The two-seam is what I struck Machado out with. That one goes to the right. My cutter goes to the left.
So it's about putting pressure. You put a pressure on your right finger? Your index finger, when you're going to make it cut to the right, and then in the middle finger, is it the pressure? Or is it something different with your hands that makes the cutter cut to your left?
So it's the grip on the baseball. So when I throw a two-seam, I grip it on, like, the middle of the baseball with the two seams that are on the top. And then I just throw that, and it just comes out of my – the way that my arm goes is, like, a low three-quarter slot. So the two-seam plays really well off of that. And then the cutter, as I described earlier, I grip it like a four-seam, and I just kind of, like, turn it up a little bit and just try to pull through it so it goes to the left.
When did this – like, when you're in high school – I mean, I know you're a third rounder at Justin, Texas. I'm looking at pictures of you pitching in high school. Like, how has this kind of evolved into where – obviously, you have to have kind of the explosive power, but you also have this movement. When has it evolved to being, like, this dynamic pitch? Did you have it this much in high school, or something that you've developed here in the last year or two?
No, I definitely didn't have it in high school. I've completely changed my repertoire since high school because our player development staff helped a lot. But I developed it in, 18 spring training is when I kind of learned how to throw the two-seam. And then, like, middle of the way through the 18 season in minor leagues in Rancho is when I learned how to throw a cutter. And it just played off my two-seam really well. So we thought that it was a good mix to have, so we kept it.
When was the last time you had short hair in the back?
Short hair would have been my junior year in high school.
So what was it? Was it a girlfriend? Was it your friends? Was it watching baseball on TV? When did you decide, let's just let it go here? Let's just let it get curly and let it get fluffy and let it get big and have that big hair swag?
I mean, honestly, it was just like a thought in my head. I was like, I'm just not going to cut my hair. It's just like, I want to leave it and then kind of see where it goes. And then I liked it once it got long, so I just didn't cut it.
How much time do you daily put into the hair?
Daily, not too much. But when I have to wash it, probably like 30 minutes it takes. It takes a lot of time to wash and, like, get it prepped so it doesn't look too bad.
Okay, so how often do you wash? Like, I figure almost every time I shower, I wash my hair. That sounds like that you don't do that. How often? But I also don't have a ton of hair left. Like, you got this beautiful mane. How often do you wash it?
I wash it normally every other day, every 3 days. It's not really great for your hair to wash every day. So I wash it every other day to every 3 days, depending on what I'm doing that day, or if it just like if I feel like it's dirty and needs to be washed.
Dustin May joining us in the herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. I mentioned it was the two seam you struck out Manny with. What is that like? What is that feeling like of being on a mound and watching great hitters and you throw something that's just so filthy that they have no chance? What is that feeling like inside of you?
I mean, honestly, that pitch, I didn't realize how much it was inside until, like, after the game when I was getting blown up with, like, mentions and stuff. But, I mean, because whenever I threw it, I kind of, like, spun off and, like, walked to the dugout. so I didn't really realize how far it was in. But, I mean, watching the video, it was kind of crazy. I didn't really realize. But, I
mean, you're almost doing a self-pat. You're like, man, that was nice.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
What has this been like? You guys it's a different type of bubble, right? A different type of quarantine. Like, you saw what happened, obviously, with the Marlins. What's it been like for you guys with this short season thus far?
It hasn't been too bad. I mean, we just have the safety protocols, and I mean, it's kind of like you're on your own, so you got to go handle your own business, but don't do something stupid and go out and get it. You know, I mean, we got a job to do, so we got to protect ourselves as well. So we have to be able to protect ourselves and get the job done on the field, so we don't want to do something stupid off the field to prevent that.
Dustin May joining us from the LA Dodgers. Of course, 15 strikeouts so far on this young season. Dodgers continue to play well. They've won their last two, beat the Padres. They've won four of their last five. Now they got a series starting at Chavez Ravine with the San Francisco Giants. How many masks do you have?
How many masks?
Yeah, do you have like one like go to that's starting to stink, or do you got a bunch of rotation? How many masks do you have?
I've got probably like 10 at the field that we got at the start of the season that I just kind of rotate through and throw on my loop to get washed every day so they don't really stink. And then at the house, I've got a lot of disposable ones and then a few cloth ones that after I wear a couple times on the cloth ones, I just take to the field and throw them on my loop to get washed. So
yeah.
I don't really wear them too long before I need to wash them just because of germs and stuff and trying to be smart about it, but that's kind of, I mean, I honestly have no idea how many I have. It's quite a few.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I just didn't know did you have like a personalized mask? Have you gotten to the point to where now you have like your own personalized mask, your own like emblem? These are mine. This is what I roll with.
No, I don't have any of those.
Okay. Where were you? I'm trying to think, where were you? It wasn't the night you pitched. It was the night before you guys pitched when you won on the throw from left field. But it wasn't Jock in left field, was it? It was Chris Taylor, right?
That was the night after I pitched. We were in San Diego, and I was sitting in the stands, and Chris Taylor threw it from left field. But I was sitting in the stands, and then as soon as he threw it, we all jumped up and ran out to the field.
You know, and then while on your way out there, you're like, social distancing, don't hug each other.
Yeah, we gotta stay social distance, and we're not allowed to do high fives and stuff. So it's kind of a different feeling, but I mean, we gotta deal with it so we can play. So it's not too bad.
No. Better throw, that one or Mookie's earlier in the year from right field to third base?
You know, honestly, I want to have to say the throw to home, but Mookie's was more like just like turn and throw, and he didn't really have time to set up. So, I mean, I don't know. They were both ridiculous. That's hard to choose. But, I mean, I guess I have to say the one to home because it saved a run and won the game.
It's got to be like, look, you haven't been doing this that long, obviously, in the bigs. Like, do you ever stop? I'm playing with this freaky talented team. We are so loaded. You got Chris Taylor in left who doesn't, you know, he plays everywhere, obviously. You got Betts throwing dudes out. You get all this talent. Still, Kerr's still getting it done. Like, has there been a pinch yourself? I cannot believe that by the time I break through in the bigs, I'm surrounded by all this talent.
No, 100%. It's absolutely ridiculous the amount of just like strong players that we have and the amount of depth that we have in the organization, like after our like big name guys, it's insane just to think how the Dodgers have built this kind of like empire that we have right now of just strength. It's ridiculous.
All right. Last thing, Dustin May joining us here in the herd. You mentioned you were in the stands and they have, you know, that some places have like the cardboard cutouts. There's some places that have the stuffed bears, right? There's some that are just, you know, empty seats. Now they're starting to cover it up. as a player, what do you like? What do you like the best to see when you're on the mound in terms of what's in the stands?
Honestly, it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're not cheering, so it doesn't matter how many cardboard cutouts or fluffy bears they have in the stands. It doesn't really matter to me because they're not cheering and they're not being loud. So, I mean, it's just fans paying to be in the stands. So it's kind of cool to see, but I mean, they don't make noise, so it doesn't really make a difference.
Is it make it better, make it worse? Like what is that like?
No, it honestly doesn't change. I mean, it's just a different look in the stand. For me, at least, I think it's kind of funny whenever I'm walking around and you take like a quick look and it's like, is that a person? And then it's like, oh no, that's just a cutout. So, but when I'm on the mound, it's no different.
All right. It's got to be also weird how much you're going to pitch against. Like you last pitched against the Padres. Your next start is against the Padres. It's like we're playing the Padres. You're playing the Padres again and again and again. It's kind of hamster on the wheel a little bit.
No, it is. We play the same teams a lot this year just because of the way that they have the schedule structured. But, I mean, hey, we're getting to play baseball, so I'm excited to play.
No doubt about it. We'll keep playing it and playing it well. Take care of that hair once every 4 or 5 days. When you do, wash it. Live that dream for the rest of us, and thanks for joining us.